The Israelites have had quite a few highs and lows while we've been on this journey with them. And while God calls them a whole congregation from the beginning and repeats it over and over again, often it feels like they're anything but whole. They've been protected during the plagues, particularly the Passover. They've been freed from slavery and delivered from the hands of Pharaoh's empire as they passed through the Red Sea. We've seen them singing and rejoicing. We've seen them lamenting and complaining. We've witnessed God provide manna and quail for them to eat and water from a rock for them to drink. We've witnessed them receiving the Ten Commandments given not just to Moses, but to the whole congregation. They've received guidelines for their life together. They're living into a new way of relating to one another that is altogether different than empire and slavery. And just when we think that they are in step with God, they get nervous because Moses has been gone too long. They talk Aaron into helping them create a God they can see, a God they can worship, and they turn their jewelry into a golden calf. They want to worship a God they can see, something they can capture, something they can wrap their minds and hands around, something clear and defined and unchanging. God sees what's going on from the mountaintop with Moses and tells Moses to go down, just as we've been singing these last weeks. Deal with these stubborn people that are faithless. And Moses gets to the bottom of the mountain, and he is so furious that he hurls the tablets, the precious ones, where God has written the law in stone with God's own finger. He hurls those tablets onto the ground, and they shatter into pieces at the foot of the mountain. Moses himself is enraged, though he quickly realizes his most pressing role is to talk God out of destroying them right then and there. God gives in to Moses and agrees not to destroy the people, but God refuses to go any further with them, saying, "I won't go up with you because I would end up destroying you along the way since you are a stubborn people." That brings us to today's story, the one that Carol read a few moments ago, where we find Moses asking God, "Who will go with them?" and reminding God that this nation is your people. Moses is worried about moving any further without having an answer to this question of who will go with us. The truth is, God gives in right away and promises to go with them. But nevertheless, Moses keeps saying, "If you won't go with us yourself, don't make us leave this place. We are your people. There's no point in us going to some promised land if you are not with us, God." And then we witness a profoundly intimate moment between Moses and God. God agrees to go with the Israelites, saying, "I'll do exactly what you've asked because you have my special approval and I know you by name." Leaning into this moment between lovers, Moses said, "Please show me your glorious presence." And God agrees, saying, "I will make all my goodness pass in front of you and will proclaim the name the Lord." And then God protects Moses and places him in the cleft of a rock where he can see the back of God and all of God's goodness pass by. We don't really know much more about this moment, but even in the glimpse of it, we see the beauty and intimacy that it contains. Sometimes it's hard for me to imagine how Moses stepped aside and built up his courage to ask God for this. Moses has so much to worry about in this moment as he's leading the people. They've almost been destroyed by empires and their armies, much less by God. They've been building a new way of life together with God, but they're struggling to trust it. In fact, they're suffering quite a bit, wondering if their basic needs for safety, shelter, food, and water will be met. As hard as Moses is working, it just doesn't seem like it's enough. The truth is, there's never a good time to step aside, especially now. The last time Moses left the people for a while, it did not go well. And we know the feeling. With natural disasters all around, disasters of leadership in the highest office of the land, and pressing issues pressing in on all sides, immigration, healthcare, housing, all affecting real lives right now, today, we know the feeling. It's not a good time to step aside. It's not a good time for stillness. It's not a good time for Sabbath and contemplation. But Moses knows they can't go on unless he does. They can't go on without God. They can't go on without renewing this covenant they've entered into with God. So Moses steps aside and asks to see God's glorious presence. And in response, God puts Moses in the gap of the rock to wait, to be protected, to be still, to see God's goodness and hear God's name. At first, this almost seems frivolous, like a waste of time, but far from it. This is a moment of connection, a moment of unity, a moment of intimacy, a moment of knowing and being known. Is vulnerability, mutuality, intimacy between lovers ever a waste of time? Immediately following this encounter between Moses and God, Moses is invited back up to the top of Mount Sinai for the renewal of the covenant, for the rewriting of the law on the two tablets, for catching sight of this vision that God has for their life together and that God hopes to instill in the Israelite people. Moses is gone for 40 days and 40 nights and fasts the whole time he's away. And when he comes back down the mountain, the text says that his face was shining, shining like the sun. And he brings with him the renewal of the covenant and shares it with the people. While it might seem like Moses is doing nothing, this is everything. Purpose is clarified, covenant is renewed, and Moses radiates the presence of God. He shines like the sun. Lately, I've been reading a book about the prophets of the civil rights era, with a chapter dedicated to each one. Howard Thurman, Martin Luther King Jr., Abraham Joshua Heschel, Fannie Lou Hamer, Dorothy Day, A.J. Muist, and Thomas Merton. Initially, I thought that Merton might be misplaced among this crew. After all, he was a monk and a hermit. And yet I soon realized why he was there. For starters, I think Merton gives the words to the impact of encountering God's glorious presence, gives words to what it means to know oneself as the beloved of God. Merton comes to see in each person that there is a point of nothingness, a point of pure truth, a point or spark which belongs entirely to God. He says this is the pure glory of God in us. It is like a pure diamond blazing with the invisible light of heaven. It is in everybody. And if we could see it, we would see these billions of points of light coming together in the face and blaze of the sun that would make all the darkness and cruelty of life vanish completely. He says, there is no way of telling people that they are walking around shining like the sun. Contemplation, a moment like this one, making space for the experience of God, is simply coming to view life through the heart of God. Seeing the world as God sees the world, as one. Through Martin's encounter with God's glorious presence, with the divine character, his seeing was transformed. And this transformation impacts the way he engages the world. Merton, like Moses, looked closely at the world around him. Through the heart of God, and he offered critiques about what he saw. During the civil rights movement, Merton pressed white liberals, claiming that they were on a mission with God, to realize how they were still clinging to golden calves. In 1963, he wrote a series of letters to a white liberal. His accusation was that white liberals were ignorant of and unprepared for the radical social change required to effectively solve America's race problem. Journeying with God's glorious presence would require much more radical transformations. If only Merton's accusations didn't ring profoundly true 54 years later. I feel like I hear Merton saying, be careful if you claim to be on the way with God. Being on the way with God requires letting go of the ways of slavery, letting go of the ways of empire, letting go of seeing ourselves as separate from one another. Excuse me. I almost put some silence into the sermon. Apparently, I was supposed to. After the renewal of the covenant, Moses and the Israelite people construct a meeting tent, just as God instructs them to do. And when it's finished, God's glorious presence leaves Mount Sinai and journeys with the people as they move on and continue their journey towards the promised land. In fact, the primary purpose of this meeting tent is for God to be at home among the Israelites, to travel with them, to care for them and protect them as they journeyed through the wilderness. The Israelites came to know that God's glorious presence was with them because it covered the meeting tent in a cloud. Whenever the cloud rose from the meeting tent, they journeyed onward. And when it didn't rise, they stayed where it was until it did. Moses knew that the only way the Israelites would know where they were going and why was for God to go with them. Moses knew that encountering God's glorious presence and being transformed, being converted from the mindset of empire and slavery to the mindset of mutuality and love of God and love of neighbor was what they desperately needed. Moses knew there was no point in going if God didn't go with them. There was no point in going if God didn't shape their imaginations about what life together would look like. There was no point in going if they weren't transformed by the renewing of their minds. The only way for us to know where we are going and why is to stop along the way and see if we are still on the way with God. Because if we don't go with God, there's no point in going. We're no different than any other nonprofit organization if we don't go with God. And claiming that we're on the way with God without stepping aside to know if that is true can be dangerous and destructive. The foundation of our stewardship, of our faithfulness, is being on the way with God, is recognizing that we are the beloved of God, that we are all walking around shining like the sun. The orientation of our life together, of life free from slavery and empire, is rooted in deliverance into a new way of seeing and being in the world. God says to Moses, "Gather the whole congregation, and I will go with you." May we live into our hidden wholeness. May we journey with God's glorious presence. Amen.